off IFRS 16 onto IFRS 15. Over to you, Ken.
Okay. Agenda paper 6 discusses the presentation of a payment received when transferring a football player to another club. The submission asks whether a football club recognizes the transfer payments received as revenue applying IFRS 15 or recognizes the gain or loss in profit or loss applying IAS 38. Paragraph 5 outlines the fact pattern described in the request. We conducted outreach on this matter, summarized in paragraphs 10 to 17. Paragraphs 18 to 41 present our analysis of how selling club presents the transfer payment received. In our view, in the fact pattern described in the submission, the entity applies paragraph 113 of IS 38 to account for the transfer payment received. Additionally, paragraphs 42 to 57 discuss whether a football club can recognize the registration right as inventory. Finally, paragraphs 58 to 59 discuss the presentation of transfer payments received in the statements of cash flows. Question 1 on page 17 of the paper asks whether you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IFRS standards.
Okay, comments on the technical analysis.
So I'm happy to go first. I agree with almost all of the technical analysis. I agree that these rights meet the definition of an intangible, and if you sell an intangible without doing anything else to it, that is a gain, not revenue. I also agree that, at least in theory, these rights could be inventory if that was the business model of the entity. I think that's similar to the decision on crypto assets from a few months ago. And if you sell something out of inventory, that is revenue and cost of sales. And all of that, to me, seems pretty straightforward, actually. I have two points over which I paused. One of them was that once I have accepted, at least technically, that these things could either be intangible assets or inventory, I do then, in my mind, have a question as to what might be an acceptable accounting policy to move an item from one bucket to the other. I think about an entity that was investing in crypto assets and had two books. An intangibles book and an inventory book, and I guess that entity would need to have some sort of way of thinking about whether or not it had got the classification right and whether it could reclassify. So the bit in the paper I paused of was the discussion in paragraph 55 onwards that highlights the guidance in paragraph 68A of IS 16 and says that that wouldn't really be applicable in in this case. And I think the argument is essentially that 68A is very specific to the fact pattern that was submitted, I think, to this committee a long time ago, and that you shouldn't really analogize to an exception. I guess the question I have in my mind is that if it's accepted that you have two portfolios and it's reasonable to develop an accounting policy that deals with movements between the two portfolios, I guess I'd be looking at IAS 8, I'd be looking at the hierarchy, and it seems that the test in the hierarchy, if I'm going to look at other IFRSs, is only that I look at other IFRSs dealing with similar and related issues. And I wondered if this was a not identical arrangement, obviously, but if similar and related being the actual criteria in IS 8 for applying the hierarchy captured this fact pattern being sufficiently similar to the 68A1 in order to be able, you know, just to get that across the line. So all the other things in the paper I agreed with. Instantly, I agreed with a bit of the paper discussing the cash flow statement, but I think the cash flow statement just flows from whatever's happening in the balance sheet. It wasn't really part of the submission, and I wasn't sure why it needed to be in the agenda decision. So I guess my two points are, I'm perhaps a bit more sympathetic than the paper is to analogising to paragraph 68A of IS 16, and just as a process point, I'm not sure the cash flow discussion needs to be in the agenda decision, albeit it seems perfectly correct.
Austin?
I also agree with this less analysis. I have a couple of observations, perhaps responding to Brian's point. I'm not sure or comfortable, I think, with moving around between buckets. I think you will make a decision up front whether something is, in the scope of IS 38 or IS 2, and once you've put it in the IS 38 bucket, e-recognition follows from that. Mm. In relation to the IS 2 analysis, I do agree that you could have in theory, have inventory. I'm not sure we explicitly need to cover that aspect because nobody's doing it, right? I mean, I think the result from the outreach was that nobody is doing that, but I'm not uncomfortable with if we want to cover that. I think the concern I have a little bit with that is if somebody was to account for these as inventories, there are all sorts of follow-up questions, right? How do you measure that inventory? You would typically have a lot of production costs rather than acquisition costs, which gives you all sorts of questions around, how do you allocate overheads and things like that when measuring your inventory. So I don't think we need to go into that, right, because it just goes too far, I think. That's why I was wondering whether that discussion is needed at all. In terms of the presentation, the cash flow statement, I do think it is important to cover that aspect in the agenda decision because there appears to be inconsistency out there in this regard. So I think it's quite important to make that clear that whatever you're doing should be consistent between, presentation in the income statement and the cash flow statement. I don't think analogizing to paragraph 68A, I think it is, of I 16 is appropriate, as also explained in the staff paper. I was wondering, if it, from an economic perspective, I think it does make a little bit of sense to think about whether, income that you generate from your ordinary activities might be revenues. I don't think, IS 38 currently allows that, so it's clear when looking at this words in the standard that that's not acceptable. I was, however, wondering whether, something like recommending standard setting in this regard might be an option, right? But obviously we only answer the question under current standards, but I think there's a notion that, especially if you think of other industries outside of the football industry, pharma, maybe media, biotech, and all these industries where all of this is an issue, that it might be worth, considering that.
Thank you. Bob?
Similar to others, but I will try not to repeat too much. Agreement with most, but not necessarily all. I'm a bit uncomfortable with the discussion in the analysis around inventory. It doesn't feel like inventory to me. I think for the most part, this asset, this right, mostly it's used to produce other revenues and very rarely held for sale. I think that really what there's happening is that because they're not transferring the contract, those rights and obligations get extinguished and the player signs a new contract with a new club. Really all you're releasing is, or transferring, is this non-compete, which really is just a release, not so much a transfer. And by the way, it's not, you can't just do it with agreement with the club. You have to also get the player's agreement to do that too, if my understanding is correct. So to me, it's just, I'm just not sure it's inventory. So I wouldn't include that in whatever we issue.
Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis, and contrary to others, with all the staff analysis. I have a very similar position to Carsten in this. I would be very uncomfortable amending IS 38 to implement the requirements in IS 16 for a couple of reasons. The first one is that an intangible item is absolutely not an item of PP&E, so the nature are fundamentally different. Second, amending IS 38 could have, in this instance, could have unintended consequences on other aspects. So to solve probably a very particular issue relating to the transfer of players within a football club or within a sports club, whatever the sports, you would potentially create unintended consequences to other sector, including the one of Vivendi, so I won't be comfortable with that at all. And last, I'm like Carsten. I think that once you've made a decision, i.e., you consider that the transfer payment you've paid is an intangible asset within IS 38 or an inventory within IS 2, then the classification is done. And when you will sell effectively the player, you have the derecognition or the accounting for the derecognition of your remaining or carrying amount of the right that flows from the initial accounting you have. But I wouldn't enable a kind of reclassification between the two buckets like Carsten mentioned. So I'm pretty much in favor of the analysis of the staff, of the proposed tentative agenda decision. And I'm not uncomfortable with the inventory aspect developed there. It's very similar to what we did for the cryptocurrencies issue. We effectively concluded very similarly to that. I would presume that effectively it would be not in rare circumstances, but not in all circumstances that you would have inventory. I think it would be an exception to a more common accounting, which is the accounting for an intangible asset effectively. So I'm pretty comfortable with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion and the tentative agenda decision as well.
Thank you. Guy?
I agreed with the way this had been analyzed in the staff paper. I did want to highlight a couple observations, though. I do agree that there are conceivably circumstances where this could qualify as inventory. I think I would also agree that it's not necessarily an across-the-board decision in the context of your pool of transfer rights. It's more a right-by-right assessment, I think, is what the paper had said, and I would agree with that. Having said that, my suspicion is, and this is just a suspicion, that it may be quite difficult to ultimately classify something as inventory, given what I suspect is a fair amount of uncertainty whether an individual specific transfer right is actually going to be developed and ultimately sold as opposed to just used in generating ticket sales for football matches, et cetera. So it is conceivable to me that there's inventory here, but my suspicion is it's probably going to be fairly rare that someone comes to that conclusion. But again, that's, I'm not saying it's not possible. That's going to be very facts and circumstances specific. On that front, I would want to ensure, though, that the agenda decision, isn't sort of implying there could have been a classification mistake here in terms of the submitter's fact pattern. I can very easily see how intangible makes a lot of sense, even in that model of use and development for sale, given the uncertainty on a player-by-player basis as to who will ultimately be sold. So I would maybe suggest in the agenda decision that we can introduce, something in that regard, that, there is judgment here rather than tending to imply it's more obvious that this, you know, would be inventory inappropriately. The other thing I wanted to raise, and I think it comes back to some of the other comments that were made here. I don't think it's not possible to transfer between intangibles and inventory, or inventory and intangibles. But I think the conditions to do so are important. I think there has to be a change in use of the asset, and the standards at play here are we can't forget about IFRS 5. So IFRS 5 says if I have a long-lived asset that I'm just, you know, ultimately decide to sell, I need to apply IFRS 5 to that transaction. And I think 68A in IAS 16 is an exception to that. In the example in 68A, they have an asset that they're holding for rental, and then at the end of that period of use, they're selling it. They didn't change its use, so absent a change in use, that would have gone to IFRS 5. But 68A is saying, no, you don't have to put that to IFRS 5. You can put that to inventory, and then you can show the disposition gross. And so that's an exception to how I would navigate 16 otherwise in the context of overlaying IFRS 5. And we don't have that exception in IAS 38. And so I think in the context of IAS 38, I think I'd first have to look to IFRS 5 if I didn't have a change in use of the asset. But I can conceive of circumstances where there is a legitimate change in use of the asset, and it's perhaps easier to see it where I may have defined something as inventory because I intended to sell it, and then my intentions change, and now I intend to use it. I could see moving it back to intangible. Maybe harder to conceive of a scenario in the other direction, but I wouldn't necessarily preclude it. And so that's why I think it's hard to go through the hierarchy and ignore the context of IFRS 5 and instead go to 68A and try and apply that through the hierarchy. And so that was why I agreed with the agenda decision. But again, I'd want to make clear we're not precluding that there could never be a reclassification, but it would depend on there being an actual change in use of the asset. Having said all of that as well, you know, the idea of showing something gross when it's routine and ordinary course, you know, even in and of itself doesn't seem all that offensive. You know, it seems that that could produce useful information. It just doesn't fit in the construct of the standards as currently drafted.
Thank you. Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. I always like to say I've always battled a little bit with the concept that we see these as intangibles, but I'm not going to go there for today. I guess my view is quite simple. I agree with where the staff got to. I mean, to start off with, I think that there's enough guidance in IAS 38 and IFRS 15 and to get us to where we need to. So I don't think we need analogies to other standards. I don't think we need to put anything up there. I agree. I think the accounting is pretty straightforward once you know within which one you are. The only comment I had was, I guess maybe just echoing some of the things people said. When I read the agenda decision, and I'm not getting into the drafting, but my concern was we jump into IFRS 2 and say, well, this is what you do. But I think that was my thinking, was we spent quite a couple of pages deciding how we get into IFRS 2 in the specific detail. And given that this is something I do agree could be rare, it was interesting that we didn't really follow some of the analysis into the agenda decision. So to me it was, well, okay, you're saying these could be inventory, but I really think if we're going to say there should be, I just felt we could have put a bit more meter on when we think these could potentially be inventory. And I would still like to use that word, that these would probably be a lot more rare than they would being intangibles. Just the other comments on people talking about the moving between 38 and 2 and that, I wouldn't open up that can. I think that we can all perceive there can be situations where you can move between the two. This isn't necessarily something in this case, in this situation, that's a problem. If we're going to start addressing when we can move things between intangibles and two, that's just going to get way outside of what we're being asked to answer. So I wouldn't address that.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you. I, like others, I agree with the staff's analysis. And the, you know, the, for that, I think that intangibles, I assume that the mostly these classified as, you know, the intangibles tend to be seasoned players who had market value, while that the in some cases that the if that the clubs have that the ordinary as ordinary course of business is that the they might be recognized as you know inventories, and the I would think that the these would be the younger player who are internally trained, and in that sense that the I have a similar question as the Carsten, that the, how can measure the cost or the carrying amount of these intangibles, and also as Brian suggested that the that these younger player might be reclassified as intangible when the market started to price these players as a more seasoned player. So from the user's point of view, all these are the kind of, you know, relevant questions when we invest in that kind of club. Thank you.
Answer?
Oh, yeah, I also want to say that I support the staff analysis and conclusion. You know, once IAS 38 is applied, 38 should be applied, you know, throughout the life of the asset, and the asset cannot cross the borders between the standard. I agree with that. I'm comfortable with that. But that leads me to think that the initial recognition, I mean, initial classification of the asset between inventory and intangibles would be very important. And for that, I think we have to give some a little bit more clearer guidelines than the agenda decision. You know, I'm just looking at paragraph 52 of the staff paper, and paragraph 52 is very clear in a sense that you know, what we are trying to say about classifying the assets into the inventory. So you know, the last sentence, the first sentence and the last sentence of paragraph 52 is actually very attractive to me. So if I read it, you know, the when entity plans to use an asset in the operation for a period of time and then sell, it is not inventory. If you go to the last sentence, it says, in contrast, if an asset is in the process of development for sale, in the ordinary course of business, it should meet the definition of inventory. And I think the last sentence and the first sentence is actually what we are trying to say in the agenda decision. So I want to put these two sentences, or at least the last sentence, only when an asset is in the process of development for sale. It's an inventory. So if we insert this sentence into the agenda decision, I think we can help the practitioners to understand when they have to classify the intangibles for sales or intangibles in inventory applying the S2. So that is my suggestion. Otherwise, I support the agenda decision.
Thank you. Marie?
Yeah, it's a topic where among regulators a while ago in Europe. We fully agree with the staff analysis. We fully agree with the P&L presentation and the cash flow statement. I think it's useful to also remind what the cash flow statement presentation is. We've never seen any classification under ES2, and I think I echo some of the comments made around that, and we fully agree that theoretically it's possible, but after I think there are some questions of valuation that was mentioned. So I wonder if it would not be more relevant to not put in the same basis the IS2 and the IS38, so maybe explain that the IS2 is in more rare circumstances and explain when on site that's not people what people are doing, so that people do not consider it just a choice, but there are some criteria just to assess before being an inventory, which might be quite high just to match in this specific fact pattern.
Okay, thank you. Bonnie?
Yeah, I think when I'm going to start at the end and then maybe come back. So I think when I first read through the paper, I understood the analysis, I think, conceptually, but practically speaking, it seemed very strange to me that you could get to two different answers, especially when it's related to payments for people, particularly on the inventory side. So I tried to kind of take a step back a little bit, and I think the point that I think is missing is disclosure. Because if you have payments made for similar items, but you're accounting for them completely separate, that has to be part of your accounting policy disclosures of how you are assessing different payments and coming to different conclusions potentially on the nature of what those are. So I think it's important to address the disclosure aspect, which to me would just be reiterating what's required already in the standards. I think, like I said, I understood the staff analysis. I just practically speaking, I found it a bit difficult that you could call a payment for a person inventory.
Yeah, I struggled with that. Yeah.
Maybe that's more of a less to do with the accounting standards themselves, but just practically speaking, as I struggled with that concept a bit.
So do I.
The staff did analyze what the standards say. I'm not denying that at all.
can I? Because that's my point too. Is Bonnie's? So when the team A acquires a player, and let's say they never played before,
they sign a.
You can sign me on the condition.
They sign a contract with that player. As part of that,
they, with this contract, with this player, they get the right to register them on this ETS, right? So they have this then, this non-compete right. Mm-hmm. When Team B comes and gets player Z to say, yeah, I want to go and play for you, why is it not... Well, okay, because we had this right on ETS with this player that, well, Team B is paying on behalf of the player. The player is actually making the payment to get his release from the system of this. And so really it's not a transfer. It's not Team B paying for this transfer. It's Team B paying the player who's then paying to get his release from this right, which then would not be inventory. It's not then something that's held for sale.
If that's the way it works, I did not understand that at all. Because I thought it was a payment between the teams itself.
So it is a payment from the new.
I mean, you've got the salary, right?
The payment comes directly from Team B to Team A. But why is it? But it's really because Team A had this, they had this right because they signed a contract with the player.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it? And I agree with you. It sort of jars a bit thinking about people and rights to people being inventory. So it's a bit of a But let's just try and sort of set that aside for a moment and just look at definitions and scopes of standards, because that's what we're being asked to do. Because the way I thought about it was. In Bob's example, if I'm looking at it from Entity A's perspective, we're saying that in their business model, if you like, they're going to make money by developing that player and then looking for somebody to pay to have that player transferred to them. So from Entity A's perspective, its ordinary activity is to spend money or whatever and develop and make this player a more attractive and profitable player and then to sell those rights to another party. That feels inventory-ish to me.
As long as you're capitalizing some of those costs to develop the player, presumably, which I think was Kirsten's point in terms of how you apply all of the standard to this particular circumstance. So I understand how the staff thought about it. It's just, practically speaking, it was a bit challenging for me to...
I know, and it's because the fact pattern's so unusual, but I think if we look at the definitions and look at the scope and all of the things like we're supposed to, that's sort of where the logic takes you. And I agree there's lots of follow-on questions about how you do these, you know, the day two accounting again. But it doesn't change the fact that reading the standard, that's where you may end up.
I agree, and I think that's where I got to the, okay, I can see how you can get there. But these are pretty judgmental items, and if it's material, then this should be disclosed in your accounting policy note. And that's where I got to the disclosure being quite critical to the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Karsten?
Yeah, I agree with all of that, and also with your observations, Sue, I think you made that really the second part of the definition of inventories, because the definition says inventories are assets held for sale in the ordinary course of business or in the process of production for such sale, right? So what you know, I agree with the technical analysis on that. I don't think anybody's doing that, which is why I'm wondering a little bit whether we really need to elaborate on that. But if we want to do that, what really worries me, I have to say, is you know, if we talk about reclassifying players between one category to the next, I don't agree with that at all, because what's going to happen for sure is that, you know, people will start buying players, present that as, you know, as an intangible asset, as an investing cash outflow. Then they, shortly before the sale, they will reclassify to inventories and present the proceeds from the sale as revenues and as operating cash inflows. I'm really worried about that part of the analysis. And I don't agree with the IFRS 5 analogy at all, because I think, you know, IFRS 5, you know, held for sale, this is not about whether it's held for sale. It will always be held for sale, you know, shortly before the sale, right? That doesn't make it revenues to me. So that's what troubles me if we are going to cover the IS2 aspect of it as well.
I agree with you, because I think reclassification is a big deal in our literature, and sometimes you do it and sometimes you don't do it, and it matters a lot when it's allowed. Michael?
So I know even less about football than I do about IS2, but anyway, I will continue. I guess just reinforcing a point which I think Young Soo made. On the inventory point, it does seem to me that, you know, I know there's not a business model test in IS2, but there is a difference, I think, between developing players who you may or may not sell, depending on how they perform, how the market goes, and acquiring a player exclusively with a view to develop and sell. And the wording in the agenda decision seems to be not as strong as the wording in the paper, I think, because the paper is more about, well, if you just happen to sell them later on, then you can't classify that as inventory. But I think the wording, the agenda decision, and it does talk about the player, but it does then also talk about, is your business, does it include ordering activities, including the development transfer? You know, that could be seen as quite broad, I think, by some preparers, that, yeah, my business includes development and transfer of players. So I would worry that the wording of the agenda decision is more open, perhaps, than you might intend it to be.
Is it helpful, Michael, just to point out, because we tried to pick up, and if we haven't, then tell us, but we tried to pick up the two main pieces we felt was in the analysis. One is kind of your business model, in a sense, matter. So it's only for entities whose ordinary activities include the development and transfer of players. And secondly, we talk about considering whether the right is acquired for development and sale in the ordinary course of business. So both of those aspects are in the tentative agenda decision.
I suppose it depends on whether you can have more than one set of ordinary activities. If you can't, then I think you capture it. But I can imagine that people say they've got various ordinary activities. I think the second part certainly helps. But I think I would include the wording that you've got in paragraph 52.
Lisa? I agree with the staff's paper. I think one of the things that I had a bit of a concern with, and it probably leads on to what Michael's saying, is around the fact that you can choose on a contract-by-contract basis, you know, whether or not it's inventory or whether or not it's an intangible. And I'd question, you know, in the ordinary course of business, do clubs actually have those two different types of businesses? So it just seems like you probably as a club would have an intention to either just hire them in to come play for you or actually be there to develop them. And then I definitely, on the points that were made about being able to reclassify between the two, that I wouldn't be supportive of, and I wouldn't see a basis for that. I call that more of an error. If on day one you didn't appropriately determine the right classification, then that would be an error.
Jim?
I agree with this analysis, and the logic is solid, as we said, because that's what the principles are saying. But just in reality, I see this issue is broader than the football players, basketball, all the athletes, even broader than that. We see these talent schools, and they train kids or whoever, a person, to be better in that capacity and sell it or realized again on development of the person. It's more broader, it's entertainment. And we see similar transactions to build some singers from nobody to some star and release it to some other kind of studios, not clubs. But here, just because the principles or standards are so designed, we cannot deny the inventory concept. But how to put it in a more civilized way of selling and buying people is beyond our
other than slavery accounting.
Yes, but here,
employment contract.
From accounting standpoint, I do agree with some saying that we should put something on the reclassification, and we can't deny you develop, you play, you get ticket income. You develop, you sell, you get some sort of income. It's more inventory-ish. That's the economic result. But just switching back and forth, we should put a line there. Otherwise, when to realize this person is for sale or is for use, it's highly judgmental, and I see there's different practices, and could be abused of using it. If the day before is too obvious, they reclass it a month or 2 months before the sale, and then they breach this whole 38 versus the 15th. So we should have some line between the reclassification.
Thank you. Bye.
At the risk of reiterating what I said earlier, I don't think we should be saying it's a choice as to whether it's intangible or immaterial. It's a question of facts.
Yeah.
And one has to analyze the facts to decide whether it's intangible or inventory. It isn't a free choice. I don't think we can deny that there could be facts where it is inventory, but that is facts and circumstances dependent. It's not a choice. And then on the reclassification question thereafter, I don't think we can deny that there could be circumstances where it does make sense to reclassify. But importantly, that's not just because I'm ceasing use and I'm going to sell. I must be deploying that asset for a different purpose. There must be a change in the use of that asset. And in that regard, I think IS 40 is pretty instructive in its guidance around transfers between inventory to investment property, investment property to inventory. And it's very clear that there has to be a change in use. It's not just a matter of, okay, I'm just deciding to sell it. I can't then reclassify because of my intention to sell. I have to have a change in use of that asset first. And if there is a legitimate change in use, there should be an ability to reclassify. But again, that's not just, you know, I can't just apply 68A as a consequence of that. There has to be a change in use.
Personally, because
if we implied you could never reclassify, to me that has broad implications, such as, I think it was raised over here earlier about an entity with multiple business models, such as a cryptocurrency entity that has a business of investing and a commodity broker trader business. And you could legitimately see a situation where you've changed the use of an asset that was in one business model but got transferred to another business model. And I wouldn't want to deny the ability to reclassify when there is a real change in use of the asset.
Personally, I think the area of reclassification is something where we've got very specific requirements and regimes in different contexts. And if we're going to propose issuing an agenda decision, we have to be really careful not to change requirements. So I think it would be extremely difficult for us to start talking about when you could have a reclassification in this context, given we have no explicit requirements.
That's why, at the minute, the tentative agenda decision doesn't touch that area.
Carl?
Yeah, even though based on the last two comments, I would support adopting the agenda decision tree. articulate somehow like guys articulated the reclassification needs.
Yeah, but I think the point here is at least from our perspective in terms of answering the question, that wasn't part of the question, and I don't think we need to go there. I think that...
But even beyond that, it would be changing requirements.
Well yeah, at least it's going beyond where we can point to requirements. There's nothing specifically talking about change in use, either in IS2 or in IS38. And I think it's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to know what we'd start to write about that and here without us just kind of maybe making up what we think makes sense, as opposed to pointing to requirements. And I don't think it's
given
needed.
That at just about every committee meeting we seem to have a new question where we have to use IAS 38 for a purpose it was never drafted for, I wonder what the knock-on consequences would be if we started to talk about that.
Maybe this is the circumstance for an interpretation, because it's a broader issue applied to this question and to cryptocurrencies, just to think about.
It does go beyond the question.
Not interacting with the outcome of this discussion, but just to think about.
No, I was just, contrary to the three last speakers, I'm very not comfortable with the any reclassification aspect. I do agree with you on that. I was almost surprised that you were proposing a choice on let's put it that way, asset by asset basis. I would have considered the overall business model of the entity, even though after having read, very spontaneously, it's what I would have thought of, but effectively after having read the agenda paper, I understood why you were saying that in this specific circumstance you could have an analyse on an asset-by-asset basis. So I think we are going already far enough to let people deal with the issue without adding requirements that would go far beyond effectively what is currently written in the standards. And I'm not sure an interpretation will be sufficient in that.
Interpretation or?
No, I mean, I'm not sure that an interpretation will be sufficient to go beyond what is currently written in the standards. You would need an amendment to the standards. Okay. And probably when it comes to IS 38, we have seen, we had already had discussions in the past. So probably let's touch to nothing before.
Okay, I'm conscious of time. We're an hour behind, so let's see if we can do Bonnie and then Carsten and then vote on whether we need to do standard setting. Bonnie?
Mine's very quick. I just wanted to clarify something I said earlier I keep harping on the disclosures because I think it's important. I agree with Guy that it's not an accounting policy choice. Yep. It was more applying the accounting to your facts and circumstances and disclosing how you're doing that. So I just wanted to clarify that point.
Carsten?
Yeah, I'm still not clear why we are covering IS2 at all, because the submission, the fact pattern says in this particular fact pattern, the entity has decided that it applies IS38 upon initial recognition. The outreach has indicated that nobody is applying for these as inventories. I think in this discussion, a lot of people have raised, is there any practical relevance for the IS2 discussion? So especially if we're not going to talk about reclassifications, I do wonder whether, we need the IS2 part at all.
I'll give you the rationale from at least staff's perspective as to why we thought it was relevant. So I agree with you, and we're very explicit, even in the tentative agenda decision, about what the facts submitted were. And even in the section that starts to talk about IS2, we make it clear, we say, therefore, in the fact pattern described, the registration right does not meet inventory, so we're not contradicting that. However, just given the context of the question, which was about whether transfer payments received could be recognised as revenue or not, we felt that for completeness, it was worth covering off the scenario, where you would end up recognising that in revenue. Or is there any scenario, or is there not? So I think we felt it was still a relevant part of the consideration.
Is this going to be quick, Guy?
It's going to be quick.
Okay.
I'm by no means suggesting we expand the agenda decision to talk about how to determine when we can, when there's a change in use that would warrant a reclassification. But if I focus on one sentence, it's the last sentence just above statement of cash flow. It says, in considering the definition of inventory, such an entity would consider on initial recognition whether the registration right is acquired for development and sale. That implies that there's only an assessment at initial recognition and it's never revisited. I wonder if it would be better to just use the words in IS-2 that say, in considering the definition of inventory, such an entity would consider whether the registration right is held for development and sale in the ordinary course of business.
Just take out the initial recognition comment.
I think that opens up a reclassification possibility then.
Yeah.
Which is why you want it deleted.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be supportive of that at all.
I won't be supporting that.
Can we vote on what hopefully is an easier question, which is whether you agree with the recommendation not to add a football project to the standard system?
We might sell more tickets if we do.
As much as my son would view my job as being much more exciting if we were to do that. But
get a show of hands on that first.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Good. Now, before I ask for a vote on the proposed words and the tentative agenda decision, do you want to comment on anything you've heard, Petrina, in terms of potential tweaks?
Yeah, so let me tell you what I've heard. I've heard Bonnie suggesting we should add something on disclosure that would reference, disclosing your accounting policy for your transfer payments made. I've heard a suggestion about building in something more of what's in paragraph 52 into the section talking about inventory. At the moment, by the way, I somehow think that what we've got reflects paragraph 52, but I mean, I'm open to working out what people think is missing from 52 that we should build into it, because we can try to address that. And that's it from my perspective. So accounting policy disclosures and a consideration of whether we've captured what's in paragraph 52 properly. I know there was a commentary about the cash flow police. I'm inclined to retain it based on what I've heard.
I'm empathetic to those who are concerned that this discussion about IAS2 might make it sound much more common than I think we all intend. I'm also, on the other hand, wary about words like rare and things like that, because it's hard to put those in.
I made the comment about just more clarity as one. I mean, I think if you look at 52, it also 53, it's just took facts and circumstances. And I think when you look at all that together, it just strikes me as there's a little bit more we could do to kind of explain to people that getting in there is not just is it 38 or it's 2? You know, that's what I'm looking for. There are kind of some, not that we're saying requirements, but you need to show certain things to get into that. And I guess the only thing that worried me when I looked at it was just that it looks to me like you're saying, well, it's in 38 or 2.
Yep.
And I'm saying we can, instead of saying it's rare, rather just say, look, getting into 2 means you need to apply your mind maybe a little bit more, and these are things to consider.
There's two things. I wonder whether in here somewhere, maybe the paragraph that's just before statement of cash flows at the beginning of that, whether just making a blanket observation, first of all, that the committee observed that whether you meet the definition of inventory is a question of fact, full stop, and then going on. At one point, somebody used the words, it's conceivable that there could be circumstances when. I wonder whether, out commenting on sort of frequency, that sort of certainly makes you think.
I like that word. Yeah. Conceivable kind of says, makes you pause for things. I like that.
And with those tweaks and an addition to refer to disclosure. I'm sorry. Can I get a show of hands on who supports the agenda decision?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
11. Okay, thank you. Right. IS 12. It must be Gustavo.